From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson. It was April 1968.
Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee.
The country erupted. There was civil unrest from Washington, D.C. to Detroit.
Of course, all America is outraged at the assassination of an outstanding Negro leader.
That's President Lyndon Johnson. At the time of King's death, he was frustrated. Congress was fighting the passage of proposed civil rights legislation on housing.
And indeed, this bill has had a long and stormy trip.
Congress had held up the Fair Housing Act for 2 years. And even with King's death, many lawmakers like this one still wanted to preserve segregation.
The death of Martin Luther King is a tragic thing, but no legislation should be passed as a memorial to anyone.
But King's death finally gave Johnson the leverage he needed to get it passed.
I do not exaggerate when I say that the proudest moments of my presidency have been times such as this, when I have signed into law the promises of a century.
Housing discrimination was totally legal until the 60s. The Fair Housing Act outlawed it. But the law didn't solve the whole problem. While it banned landlords and people selling homes from discriminating, banks still weren't making home loans to African Americans. It took another 9 years for Congress to pass a second law, the Community Reinvestment Act, which required banks to lend to qualified borrowers in so-called blighted neighborhoods, code for neighborhoods where mostly minorities lived. So where are we now? We spent a year going through millions of mortgage records to find out who can get a home loan and who can't. We first reported our findings last February. Our reporters Aaron Glantz and Emmanuel Martinez, along with producer Catherine Miskowski, dug into the story. Later in the show, we're going to tell you what lawmakers did after hearing what our reporters found. But first, we head to a neighborhood in West Philadelphia, where Aaron picks up the story.
I'm in a part of West Philadelphia that's not far from the University of Pennsylvania. It's what realtors call a neighborhood in transition. There are blocks pockmarked with vacant lots and houses with peeling paint and sagging front porches. This part of West Philly is mostly black. Aunts, cousins, grandparents often live right on the same block. Families have lived here for decades, settling as far back as the 1940s. But there's a lot of remodeling and construction going on. Newcomers are moving in, attracted by the affordable price of housing and proximity to the university. I'm going to tell you about two of these newcomers. One's black, one's white. They each wanted to buy a home in the same neighborhood. Situations like this are playing out all over the country. Let's start with Rochelle Faroul.
I am from Brooklyn, New York, by way of Barbados.
Rochelle had graduated from Northwestern and done a stint in the Peace Corps. She was in her early 30s, teaching computer coding at Rutgers University and renting an apartment here in Philly, when she decided to buy a house.
My mom and her siblings have been obsessed with homeownership, you know, and just like ingrained this idea in all of us. My brother and I and my three cousins, no matter the cost, buy a home.
You can hear how determined Rochelle is. But here's the other thing. She's super organized and prepared. Her mom was a public school teacher who sent her to an elite boarding school. Rochelle went on scholarship and was one of the few African Americans there. She's a high achiever, but buying a house turned out to be a lot harder than Rochelle expected. Her first stop was Philadelphia Mortgage Advisors. It's part of a new breed of independent lenders that are not banks, but are making an increasing share of the loans in the economic recovery. Rochelle told us her broker was a woman named Angela Tobin.
Anybody who works in the mortgage arena here in Philadelphia seems to know who she is.
At first, the broker was enthusiastic. Her emails to Rochelle were full of exclamation points. Angela reviewed Rochelle's credit score, income, and savings, and told her everything was on track. But then suddenly, Rochelle's application was turned down. Rochelle wasn't on staff at Rutgers. She was teaching there on a contract. Angela told her she hadn't been doing it long enough. She told Rochelle she would have to wait 2 more years or get a full-time job. Rochelle didn't think that was the real reason. I wanted to know what Angela thought. So I called her up.
Hey, great, Aaron. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for taking the time to talk. I appreciate it.
First, I asked her about the company's performance in Philly. The government keeps track of who gets loans and who doesn't.
Well, we looked at the data. We found that your company, Philadelphia Mortgage Advisors, had made like 250, 300 conventional mortgage loans in 2016, and only 10 of them were to African Americans.
I don't know where your data is coming from.
Yeah, our data is coming from the government. Your company and every other company is filing information through the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act. And when we look at the data for your company, we see a much larger proportion of borrowers who are white and a much smaller portion of borrowers of color.
I can't really speak to that because that is not at all who my particular clients are. If you'd like to speak with someone at my office, I'm happy to give you their contact information.
I told Angela I'd be happy to talk to anyone from the company. But first, I asked her about Rochelle's application. Why had Angela turned her down?
She was concerned that it might have something to do with her race, that she was turned away.
No, that's not at all accurate.
Why do you say that? Well, you hung up on me.
After Angela hung up on me, I tried to set up an interview with an executive at the company, but no one would talk. Instead, they sent a statement. Philadelphia Mortgage Advisors didn't dispute the numbers it had reported to the government, but they said an outside auditing firm had found there was, quote, no elevated risk of unfair lending practices at the company. Rochelle still wanted to buy a house.
I was like, okay, I need to get a full-time job.
Rochelle got a job, associate director of the South Asia Center at the University of Pennsylvania, an Ivy League institution. She found a two-story house that needed some work. And for a loan, she went to Santander Bank, the U.S. outpost of a Spanish bank, with a regional headquarters in Boston.
My experience was so horrible.
The process dragged on for months.
I had a fair amount of savings, and still I had so much trouble, just left and right.
Her loan officer kept asking for new information, or sometimes the same information again. Rochelle answered all their questions.
Didn't matter. None of it mattered.
She felt like she was getting the runaround.
I was really sad. I remember there was one day where I just sat on the couch and was just like so defeated.
The process went on so long that eventually an unpaid electric bill showed up on her credit report. It was for an apartment in New York where Rochelle didn't live anymore. She'd sublet it to another tenant. When Rochelle found out about the bill, she paid it right away. But it still plunged her good credit score down 50 points. And Santander said that was a deal breaker. Rochelle's story is all too familiar to real estate broker Arlene Waynes-Thomas.
It's one thing after another, one thing after another. It's just like pulling layers off an onion.
Arlene's the president of a local chapter of African American real estate brokers. She's been helping people buy homes in Philadelphia for 30 years. And she says her black clients are treated differently by lenders.
The things that happen behind the scenes is what is disturbing. Well, they may not like what happened between the last time you worked on this particular job to this one. They may see there was a gap. I have seen situations where they've asked people for the children's birth records. They want to know how old they are.
In this neighborhood in West Philly, black people have been having trouble buying homes for generations. It's a part of a bigger story of housing discrimination in America called redlining. It dates back to the Great Depression. The federal government drew lines on maps and shaded some neighborhoods red, warning banks not to make loans there. They said it would be financially hazardous because some areas were, and I quote, infiltrated by Negroes, immigrants too. Other neighborhoods, like the one in West Philly, where Rochelle wanted to buy, were shaded yellow. The government said it was definitely declining because the infiltration of Jewish people had depressed values and that the neighborhood was, quote, threatened by Negro encroachment. Today, the maps are gone, but the lines of disparity are still intact. When we come back, a white couple without a whole lot of cash gets the loan of a lifetime in the same neighborhood where Rochelle is trying to buy a house.
We could easily get pre-approved for a mortgage up to almost $500,000.
They were willing to offer you a $500,000 mortgage even though you had almost nothing to put down and you're a radio producer and a graduate student?
Mm-hmm. Correct. After like a 5-minute phone call.
That's next on Reveal.
Support for Reveal comes from Sunbasket, offering home-delivered meals designed to fit every healthy journey, including paleo and gluten-free dinners and 5-minute salad mixes made with organic produce and clean ingredients. Learn more at sunbasket.com/reveal.